Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Subscribe to the show on YouTube. Why? Because we wish you to watch more often, which will then eventually raise revenues and we'll make more money. Also, you can subscribe there and hit the bell for notifications if you wish. Then you can see all the stuff that we put out there. We'd appreciate that. Get your Stu Does America merch at StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10 for 10% off your entire order. Corey DeAngelis is going to join us with the latest on the battle for school choice here in Texas and honestly around the country. There's so much going on there. We've got a major update for you in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. We'll go over the latest coming up. We're going to start by doing the great Democrat implosion of 2025. It's fun to watch this happen, isn't it? When things sort of shake out of control and, you know, the wheels start coming off the train and it looks like the whole thing might just derail in front of your eyes. No, I'm not talking about a Pete Buttigieg era actual train. I'm talking about what we're seeing now in the Democratic Party, this sort of implosion that's going on. And it is bizarre to watch. Let me give you just one example of this. Chuck Schumer. The guy's been around forever. He's been a liberal forever. He's votes left on every single thing. He's the Senate leader. The left is very upset with him for one reason, because he apparently, at the last minute, after talking a big game about how he could stop the Republican continuing resolution, continuing spending, in a way that doesn't make many conservatives happy, he then, of course, had to fold and vote for it anyway, so there wasn't a government shutdown that he got blamed for. He had a big book coming out, and he's going to go a big tour to promote that book, and maybe not so much anymore. Schumer now postponing his book tour due to security concerns amid anger from Democrats over government funding fight. Interesting. Now, I will say funding can be a big issue. It's, you know, the Tea Parties were part of that righteous anger was because of funding issues. I don't typically see the left really motivated by such things. They just want more spending. What we basically did was lock in massive levels of spending for the next, 6-7 months? This isn't like a conservative proposal by any means, but some of the people on the left were like, you should stop it. You should make conservatives have to deal with all the shutdown stuff. Maybe they'll get blamed for it. That was sort of the far left position. I will say there might be something else at play. The Democratic leader was scheduled to appear in Baltimore, Washington, D.C., New York City, Philly, Los Angeles, and San Francisco to discuss his new book, Anti-Semitism in America, a Warning. Due to security concerns, Schumer's book events are being rescheduled, said representatives for Schumer. Now, was it the funding? I mean, probably. At some level, it was the funding. There certainly were some people upset with that decision. That there is some real anger on the left. Would that mean that he would be unsafe at his book signings? Or might I just propose there's a giant wing of the Democratic Party that seemed to be awfully aligned with Hamas and might be using a funding dispute as an excuse to go protest, quote unquote, protest a book about anti-Semitism? Just going to throw that out there. I think maybe a little bit of both columns apply in this particular instance. But I mean, here's the Democratic leader who, look, let's be honest about it. And this has happened on the right, too. There have been examples of this on the right, where in reality, the people at the top in leadership can't really do much of anything, right? They can't really do much of anything. They don't have big enough majorities, or they're in the minority. Really, Chuck Schumer couldn't do much of anything here. There wasn't much he could do. He could throw the country into a government shutdown, which, again, doesn't really benefit them. I think if that happened, the person making the decisions as to who is an essential employee is the same guy running DOGE. So, you know, you might be sitting back and saying, I don't know if I'm a Democrat. I don't know if I want them making those decisions. And in reality, there's not much he could do there. They're just pissed off because they're losing and they're flailing around and they're in the middle of an implosion. And that is what we are here to talk about. Now, this is also leading to a bunch of threats of primaries. Democrats setting themselves up for a year of primaries in 2026. On the heels of his support of the funding bill, Schumer has been hit with the most backlash. Within hours of his announcement that he would support an advancing GOP-backed bill, which needed 60 votes to clear procedural hurdles, progressives were encouraging AOC to take on Schumer when he's up for re-election in 2028. You think that's going to happen? Think AOC is going to step in for that battle? My guess would be yes. I think she will. CNN poll Sunday firmly backed the sentiment against the Democrats. The survey showed that the Democratic Party's favorability is at 29%, a record low in CNN polling dating back to 1992. The poll shows a significant drop of 20 points since January 2021 when Trump left office following his first term. That's the success of the Joe Biden administration. That's the Biden era in a nutshell right there. Which, again, probably pretty good for conservatives, even though we had to pay a high price with the country being in so much trouble. But when you talk about just political benefit, really, he sunk the party to a level that wasn't possible by most politicians. He really did something pretty special there, if you want to look at it that way. Now we're having a new wave of Democrats who are coming up. Obviously, AOC's stepping up. We're also getting Jasmine Crockett. Yes, Crockett, possibly supporting an AOC candidacy over Schumer. She doesn't really say she would do that. That's sort of the way it was reported. Listen to her wording here. I mean, I think we all know what she would do if this situation presented itself, but her response wasn't quite that clear.
You're close with Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. Some of your fellow House Democrats say, and not just progressives, by the way, we've heard that moderates have said this too, that they're ready to support her to challenge Chuck Schumer in a Democratic primary. Would you get behind that?
That's 4 years from now. If you were asking me at least in 2 years, then I would have an absolute answer. But I can tell you that there are a lot of people that are watching his leadership in this moment. This is the moment. We don't even know what elections will look like in 4 years if we will have elections. And so I definitely think that younger, fresher leadership may be something that many of us, not just depending on what part of the spectrum you're on, but many Americans may be looking for, especially in the state of New York.
Who knows? Maybe we won't even have elections. By the way, stop those darn conservatives from fear-mongering all the time. But we might not even have elections in 2028, 2026. The answer to her question there, of course, his question there is obviously yes, she would support AOC if this came down to what we were looking at. There's almost no doubt about that. And that is sort of the new, that's where the energy of the party is right now, right? That's where the energy of the Democratic Party is. It's against people like Schumer, and the whole sort of structure is shaking apart. Now, AOC does lead poll of Democrats on which leader best reflects the party's core values. Now, I wouldn't take that much into this poll. I will tell you that I believe this is true. If you think about what really is the value of the Democratic Party, it's, you know, it's largely two things, communism and stupidity. And there's nobody that exemplifies that those two things together than AOC. She's perfect. She's literally a perfect, like if you went into a lab and you took half of the test tube and you filled it with stupidity and half of it with communism, you'd come out with AOC. That's basically how perfect she is. She fits perfectly and should be the face of the Democratic Party. Now, when you look at the details of the poll, it's not quite as clear as I believe it is. The survey released Sunday, Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents were asked to name the one person, when thinking about Democratic leaders today, who best reflects the core values of the Democratic Party. 10% said AOC, 9% said Kamala Harris, 9% said Kamala Harris, 8% said Bernie Sanders, and 6% said Hakeem Jeffries. Now, really, I mean, Sanders and AOC are basically the same there. Jasmine Crockett even got some percentages. She got 4%. Chuck Schumer, Gavin Newsom, Nancy Pelosi, Alyssa Slotkin, what? Got 2% as well. It tells you something about Gavin Newsom's. People love to promote Gavin Newsom like he's this big figure that connects with everybody. No, he really doesn't. I don't see it. I don't think there's any organic interest in Gavin Newsom as an actual candidate. I think there is organic interest in AOC as an actual candidate. But really, Gavin Newsom is more of a media creation than anything else, though you never know. Now, we have all that going on. Schumer is on the outs. The rise of AOC, this battle back and forth as to who's going to control the party, all the criticism coming from the progressive wing and the squad types, that's going on. And then you have AOC feuding with Kyrsten Sinema, the former Democratic senator. She ripping Senate Democrats for apparent flip-flopping on the filibuster now that they need it. Now, this is a little hard to follow, so let me try to present this to you the way that actually happened. First, The Hill wrote a story about AOC's comments on Chuck Schumer, saying that she was pissed off, basically, that he didn't utilize the filibuster to stop the bill that was the funding bill that she's so mad about. Kyrsten Sinema, who famously didn't want to get rid of the filibuster, comes back and says, huh, change of heart on the filibuster, I see, and posts an old tweet of AOC when she said, we could protect Roe tomorrow, but Sinema refuses to act on the filibuster. Now, AOC came back with a just gibberish, nonsensical response. She said, still no. In fact, the same Dems who argue to keep the filibuster for when we need it do not, in fact, use it when we need it. It's only used to block Dem policies. Yeah, no Republican policies have ever been filibustered. I mean, at some point, you wonder, is there a war going on between the two brain cells? So they're totally preoccupied and can't come up with one actual thought? Is that what's going on inside of AOC's head? Something's happening in there, because I assume she's got a couple of brain cells, but they don't seem to be on the job. Have they been impeached? Did she impeach her own brain cells? I'm concerned. Sinema, by the way, and look, as much as I like to tell you that I would be right on everything all the time, Sinema, I thought was going to be really bad as a senator. I thought she was going to be terrible. Her past indicated, I think, quite clearly she would be very far left. You know, she had some moments where she showed she was in the center. I really thought those were the insincere parts of her. When she wanted to get elected, all of a sudden she moved to the center. I will say, as a senator, she was better than I expected. Not good, not great, better than I expected, which is saying something, I suppose, because she did actually hold the line on stuff like that. You could say the same stuff about Fetterman. I mean, Fetterman seems like this good Democratic senator because he's occasionally sane on like two issues. But that's way more than you're getting. People like Sinema are just, they're just ejected out of the party. They're like poor goose hitting his head on the top of the Top Gun shield there and just plummeting to the ocean. It's sad. But that is the real truth about the Democrat Party. You can't be Sinema and really be in there. I, you know, I have seen mostly positive stuff about John Fetterman because, you know, I'm on the conservative side. And I, you know, I see when he says sane things about, let's say, Israel, people are on the right are like, oh, wow, somebody on the Democratic side saying something smart for once. That being said, the left hates him now. And again, this is the same type of thing where he has a very far left background. He's voted almost entirely left wing. His voting record, when you look at his voting record, it would make you cringe as a conservative. But just the fact that he goes on TV and occasionally says something sane is enough to cross the hurdle and clear the hurdle of sanity when it comes to Democrats these days. We also have, of course, all the woke stuff still going on. We had an example of this on Bill Maher the other day, Bill Maher shutting down Don Lemon's racist comments about black Trump supporters. I want to play this for you. Now, Don Lemon's not a Democratic politician, though, of course, a very left-leaning news guy and trying to, you know, make a name for himself. But he does sort of illustrate the actual belief of most of the left, most Democrats, when they look at black Republicans. They look at them with this disdain. You're not even real. You remember Joe Biden saying, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. That is, let me give you that segment now out of the mouth, essentially, of Don Lemon.
The same thing that when I see not all black Republicans, but I see a black MAGA person who is carrying Donald Trump's water and they know that he's lying. It is the shortest line to the front. Because if you're black and you're whatever, you're just in line with a bunch of other Democrats that are doing the same thing that you're doing. But if you become a black MAGA person, it's like, whoa, let's book this person. Let's put him on television.
So you don't think you can be a sincere black MAGA person?
I think there can be sincere Republicans.
but you can't be a sincere black Republican.
I don't think that you can be a rational MAGA, be black and be a rational MAGA person. I think you can be black and be a Republican.
I think they would find that very insulting.
Well, I mean, the truth is often insulting.
See, you can't have those views if you're black. I mean, that is essentially, once again, if you don't vote for Joe Biden, you ain't black. Now, he has a little bit of a disclaimer that you could be a Republican, but not a MAGA person. OK, that's fine. I guess he has some little out there. But at the end of the day, that's their opinion, right? It is very, very insulting to African-Americans who have their own rational beliefs. They have their own beliefs. I love the line, by the way, and this is such a fascinating thing, because for years and years and years and years, we've been told that Republicans hate black people because they look different or something, right? There's this, black people because they're different than us and everything else because we're so deeply, deeply, deeply racist. And yet, what Don Lemon says is, when you are a black MAGA person, it's the fastest way to the front of the line, meaning that you'll be embraced by conservatives, by MAGA people. Essentially, if you have similar worldview, that it doesn't really matter if you have black skin or brown skin or white skin or whatever skin. That's a fascinating admission because, you know, if anything, it shows a preference. And I think this is, I mean, quite obviously true, right? Like you have a situation where because there's a lower percentage of African-Americans who are voting for Republican policies, Republicans often will embrace African-Americans, even if they're kind of new on the scene. You do maybe get a little bit of a promotional interest from a lot of conservative media because of that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's totally fine. It's interesting, of course, to hear from all different perspectives. But like a racist party, a hardcore racist wouldn't want black people in their group because they didn't like black people. This doesn't make any sense. This is Don Lemon in a nutshell. I guess I did not breaking news with that particular thing. The direction is really interesting because this is sort of a war. It's a factional war on the left. And they're trying to figure out which way to go with this because they realize what they've done so far obviously is not working. And they're having massive, massive trouble. So where do you go? What do you do next? There's an article in The Atlantic by Derek Thompson. This is actually an excerpt from his book, I believe. The political fight of the century. For the first time in decades, America has a chance to define its next political order. He says, Trump offers fear, retribution, and scarcity. Liberals can stand for abundance. I believe the name of the book is Abundance. Now, Derek Thompson is a person on the left, but somebody who writes pretty interesting stuff and has interesting perspective. He highlights this, and I will say the concept of his book is a little frightening to me, honestly, as a conservative, because of some of the changes on the right that I've seen. He's arguing for abundance, essentially, like to leave behind things like all these, he doesn't exactly say this, but like if you think about like a restrictive environmental policy that makes it so business can't occur, this sort of degrowth fetish that a lot of people on the left has. His point is like, hey, let's go the opposite direction. Let's go for abundance. Let's make people's lives better. Let's bring things in. We can do that with liberal policies. And like you might say, well, that's not consistent with liberalism. I would agree largely, though. Parts of it, like he's saying, like, oh, well, healthcare for everybody is abundance, right? We don't have scarcity of healthcare. So there's some of the stuff you would agree with, some of it you wouldn't. That's kind of a long setup. Maybe we'll have him on and talk to him about the book. But I want to give this quote because this is really fundamental about where we are right now. This is what he says in criticism of Democrats and their current approach. If Democrats want to understand why they're failing to achieve their goals in the places they control, they need to concede that the faulty party also lives in the mirror. Look at California. Its most populous cities are run by Democrats. Every statewide elected official in California is a Democrat. Liberals should be able to say, vote for Democrats and we'll turn America into California. Instead, with the state's infamously high cost of living and stark homelessness crisis, it is conservatives who can say, vote for Democrats and they'll turn America into California. Liberal governance should be an advertisement for itself, not for its opposition. And that, of course, is obviously true. No politician could run on the left and say, gosh, we've got control of California. We will make America into California. That would be a losing message from any Democrat and really any left-wing state. On the other side, Republicans do say stuff like this all the time. We often say that stuff like, hey, put us in power, we'll make America just like Florida. Hey, put us in power, we'll make America just like Texas. That's something we actually do say. We're proud of the results that we are achieving in many areas in the country, where the left has to basically run from them and give you this sort of theoretical version of what could happen if you trust them, even though you probably shouldn't. But don't worry about that. Vote for me, or at least give us a bunch of money. That's not a winning message. And I think it's clear at this point that that is not a winning message. They're flailing to try to figure out what is a winning message. Before we go, I want to highlight one more time AOC and Jasmine Crockett, because they are a couple of my faves, I got to say. When you're thinking of, like, who's your favorite Democrat, and I don't mean, like, favorite policy Democrat. You might say, well, John Fetterman is good on a couple of things. No. I'm talking about who are the people you love seeing in the media? Who are the people that you absolutely love when they comment on an important issue? Because you know they're going to give you the absolute dumbest version of it. And the most fun thing to do is to fight with an AOC or a Jasmine Crockett, because you know whatever they say is going to be dumb. And you're going to be able to win that battle. It's just a lot of fun. So I was thinking about coming up with a list of the top five Democrats that I love. I'd have to put AOC on that list. I'd have to put Jasmine Crockett on that list. I'd have to put Mazie Hirono on that list, because she just blurts out some of the strangest things and doesn't seem to ever know what she's talking about. Who are the Democrats that you would put on that list? I mean, Ilhan Omar, maybe you'd put on that list. Rashida Tlaib, maybe you'd put on that list. I don't know if you want to go to, Joe Biden's already gone. Drop them in the comments below. If you're on YouTube, drop it in the comments below. It is, just give me the Democrats you'd nominate for that top five list. I want to go through some of these names maybe a day this week or next week and come up with like a top five that we can kind of have and then only replace when it's absolutely necessary. So drop those comments below wherever you are watching, and we'll get to that in the coming days. Corey DeAngelis is going to talk to us about school choice. That's next. Can we talk for a second about emergency preparedness? We do live in a world that is constantly changing and evolving, and a lot of times it's in ways that we don't see coming. But one thing that will always remain the same is the need to be ready in that moment. Like, right, you got to be ready now, because you never know when that moment is coming. Some emergency preparedness vitals that you need to consider: emergency contacts, making sure, you know, like a plan for evacuation routes, meeting places. I always think about this with my kids, and like, God forbid we have a fire. How do we get out? And make sure you give them that little talk, right? A getaway bag for important documents, maybe flashlights, batteries, the basics, right? Non-perishable food. You should also consider having a Jace case on hand, because I can't recommend these highly enough. If you're the type of person who wants to be prepared when disaster strikes, you're absolutely going to want this for your home. I had an issue. My mom was sick recently, and she needed some antibiotics. She, you know, and I told her, I'm like, you could go to the doctor. We're not in a, you know, a nationwide shortage or anything. Why didn't you go to the doctor? And she's like, well, I didn't feel well. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to bother anyone, you know. Anyway, the bottom line is we had some medication from the Jace case, some antibiotics on hand, and I was able to just bring them over and give them to her. And in a couple of days, she was feeling a lot better. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. They have ivermectin if you want that. They have a bunch of stuff if you want it. You can customize it as you wish. Go to Jace.com. They've got a giveaway going on right now. You can enter that or just purchase your own case. Enter the promo code STEW at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STEW at Jace.com. Jase.com. The promo code is STEW. It's Jace.com. Promo code STEW.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 € pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
want to bring in Corey DeAngelis. He's a senior fellow with the American Culture Project, a visiting fellow for the American Institute for Economic Research, and author of the great book, The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools, which is available wherever you get your books. Corey, thanks for coming back on the show, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think you're on for some potential good news, at least here today. As I live in Texas. My kids go to private school. So I've implemented a bit of school choice, but at a great expense to myself and my family, and to a level that a lot of people can't necessarily hit. So we're hopefully changing this with a new school choice bill in Texas. Can you tell us, why don't you start with if there's any chance of this thing actually passing?
Yeah, that's right, Stu. We're winning so much, I'm almost getting tired of winning. Just kidding. We're not done yet. We haven't gotten across the finish line. But we have had 15 red states pass universal school choice in the past 4 years alone. And it's because people like Randy Weingarten really stepped on a rake. They fought to keep the schools closed. They showed conservatives what was happening in the classroom. And the red states are fighting back to empower parents with education freedom. And our home state, my home state of Texas, I live in San Antonio. The Senate already passed the universal school choice bill by a vote of 19 to 12. And the House, which has been the laggard for a long time, the Senate's easily passed the bill so many sessions before. The House ultimately had too many rhinos in it before locking arms with the Democrats to vote against their own party platform issue of school choice. But this year, House Bill 3, a universal school choice bill in the Texas House, has 76 co-sponsors already. And co-sponsors are typically a lower bound on the number of votes you're going to have in the chamber, because you're not going to sign your name onto a bill if you're not going to vote for it. And you need, guess what, 76 votes to pass a bill out of the Texas House. So they have enough votes. The speaker is also on board, so that's 77 votes. Brian Harrison hasn't signed his name on yet, and he's a school choice supporter. That would be 78 votes in support of school choice. So I think it's going to happen. And Governor Abbott, that's a no-brainer. He's going to sign the bill. He's a big supporter of education freedom. And he's been one of the – he called special sessions over the issue of school choice and also made school choice an emergency item. So it looks like Texas, if it's not the 16th state to go all in, will be the 17th state, because New Hampshire – is racing Texas to be the next state to go all in on school choice this year.
This is such a good development and such an incredible thing that's happened over the past few years, as you point out, in special thanks to people like Randy Weingarten, who really, I think, woke up a lot of people. Because, as you mentioned, Texas should have had this passed decades ago, didn't do it for a very long time. But the reason why there are 76 votes for this, I think, is really important. It's because people kind of woke up and held their representatives accountable, right?
That's right. If you look at the Republican primary ballot, 80% of the voters supported a school choice ballot proposition directly on the ballot. You look at polls over and over again. A new one just came out from University of Houston, University of Texas Tyler, showing supermajority support on the issue of school choice. The University of Houston poll show like every demographic was large support of school choice. 77% of parents, 70 or so percent of Republicans. The lowest demographic of support was actually among white Democrats, and that was still majority support of 52% of white Democrats supporting the education savings account proposal in Texas. And those rhinos who voted against school choice last year with all the Democrats, guess what? Two-thirds of them lost their seats after voting against school choice. So it really came down to the voters making their voices heard at the ballot box, turn this into a GOP litmus test issue. And if Democrats are smart, they'll at some point come along too. I mean, the thing is, they're owned by the teachers unions and they listen more to special interest as opposed to their own constituents. And Democrat voters support school choice in large numbers. They use school choice programs. And so the Republicans are leading on the issue. Hopefully the other party comes along at some point. And if they don't, they're probably going to lose some elections over it.
It's just great news and looks to be a really great outcome. We'll hold our breath and make sure that this actually happens. You use the term universal school choice, and that's an important term if it means what I think it means, because I do see some of these bills that I've seen be proposed that are like, well, school choice, as long as you don't make too much money or as long as you're in this certain area, there's all these qualifications to it. What is this Texas bill like?
Yeah, so for a long time, for decades in the school choice movement, it was incremental reform just for students with special needs, low-income families, maybe you live in a certain area. We've gone from 0 to 100 real quick on the issue. The new barometer of success is whether you have a universal program, meaning everybody is eligible regardless of income or background. But I will say there is a cap on the number of scholarships in the proposal in Texas. This has been the case in other states as well that have gone all in with universal eligibility. And so it looks like there will only be about 100,000 scholarships available in the initial years of the Texas program if it passes. And, you know, look, that's I would like all 5.5 million to be able to apply and then have the funding available. But the reality is they only set aside about $1 billion in the budget for this proposal. The good news is this doesn't all happen in a vacuum. If you pass the bill now, get a lot of people to sign up for it, you're more likely to be able to use that a wait list to pressure lawmakers to expand the program in the next session. This happened in North Carolina. They had like 50,000 kids on the wait list trying to get these scholarships. The legislature came right back after pressure, and then they eliminated the wait list, awarded scholarships to all the families. This happened in Utah as well. They went universal with eligibility. You know, thousands of people were on the wait list. Legislature came right back and expanded it. So the long story short is we shouldn't make perfect the enemy of the good. We should take the incremental victory, even if it's not for all 5 or 6 million kids in Texas, and especially if that incremental victory gets us closer to our utopia in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think even those incremental reforms you talked about earlier, you know, students with special needs and such, are still positive moves, you know, and I would have been happy if we got a program here in Texas that just did some of those things. The fact that we're going this far, I think, is really, really positive. But I think you're right. I think it's going to be shown as a popular program, and then there's going to be pressure on the legislature. And if it's there, it will increase. Let's broaden this a little bit outside of just Texas. You've mentioned a couple states, New Hampshire, maybe on the fringes of getting into a system like this. Where are the other states that are really having active movements and we're seeing positive progress?
Yeah, it's the red states. I mean, the Democrats, they're a wholly owned subsidiary of the Teachers Union. Randy Weingarten's union, 99.9% of their campaign contributions from AFT went to Democrats in 2024. It's a money laundering operation. It ought to be illegal. But yeah, 15 states have passed universal eligibility school choice programs in the past 4 years, which makes more advancement in the past 4 years on school choice than in the preceding four decades. But it's been states like Arizona, Iowa, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Utah, Florida, and so on and so forth. The long story short is the red states. And it's because, you know, the Democrats, they receive a lot of funding from the teachers unions, and the teachers unions want that monopoly on funding. And so they don't want your kid to go anywhere else because their schools are funded based on the number of students they have. And so it's a monopoly situation. It's special interest politics at its worst. But the teachers unions are losing their grip over politicians because there's a new special interest group in town. It's more like a general interest. They're called parents. They're the kids union. They're fighting for their own children, and they care about their kids more than anybody else. And they outnumber the employees in the system. So again, if the rhinos and the Democrats are smart, they will start to listen to the new sheriff in town, the parents who want more of a say in their kids' education. We saw how this worked out in Virginia with Terry McAuliffe, the Democrat who said, I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach. It backfired spectacular fashion, and Terry McAuliffe lost in a blue state to Glenn Youngkin on the issue of education. So ultimately, at the end of the day, the more that parents lock arms together, band together, politicians are going to be forced to listen to them. And I wish these politicians would have a true change of heart. Some of them do, but sometimes they listen more to power than to logic. And parents are really showing the way, leading this revolution for educational freedom from state to state in the laboratories of democracy that our founders intended. The red states are actually behaving that way. Hopefully the blue states come along. If they don't, maybe the blue states will become red states at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting. New Hampshire is a great example of this being kind of a purplish state, maybe even a little slightly to the blue in some ways. Yet if they can pass it, that's a really good sign for these purple states. I think there is, you're probably right in that a lot of these bright blue states are not going to come around, at least right away. But these purple states should be pretty fertile ground. I mean, you went through the polling. This is not, it's not like that just in Texas. It's all over America. People want to be able to send their kids to the schools they want to send them to.
That's exactly right. And another way to get school choice to families in blue states is something in Congress right now called the Educational Choice for Children Act. It's a tax credit at the federal level. So it's not federal money following the child. It's you keeping more of your own funding that would have otherwise gone to the government at the federal level. And this would be eligible for families in red states and blue states alike. So maybe this could show proof of concept in places like California and New York, where they basically have zero chance of getting it through the legislature. Maybe we go directly to the parents. And this bill has already passed out of committee. It's the first nationwide school choice bill to pass out of the House Ways and Means Committee in U.S. history. And Mike Johnson's on board, the speaker, the Senate president, the majority leader's on board, John Thune. President Trump said he'd sign the bill. He campaigned on the issue of nationwide school choice. And I think that sparks the kind of competition we need to really shake things up in education to improve outcomes. Abolishing the Department of Education would be another welcome advancement. But even if we abolish the department, we still have these geographic monopolies within the states that don't have an incentive to listen to parents. And so when you go to the school board meeting, they cut off your mic. They label you as a domestic terrorist in some case. They label you as the enemy. But if you have school choice, if you can vote with your feet, well, then they have an incentive to treat you as a customer and a partner in the relationship. And it's a win-win solution. The public schools improve in response to competition.
It's true. You should be able to choose where you send your kids to school, and you should not have to pay twice for it. These are just basic requirements that I think parents are okay to ask for here. Corey DeAngelo, senior fellow from the American Culture Project, visiting fellow for the American Institute for Economic Research, and author of The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from Radicals Ruining Our Schools, like Randy Weingarten. I just added that to the end of the title, but I think it's pretty much in there as well. Corey, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Stu. Good talking to you.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mild würzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
So major news breaking today about the Russia-Ukraine situation. There was a Trump-Putin call that happened when we were doing the radio show today. They went back and forth. I know it was longer than an hour. I don't know how long the entire call went. But when they came out, we had what seems to be an agreement on a limited ceasefire with Ukraine. President Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin had this call. The U.S. said after the call that Russia agreed to an energy and infrastructure ceasefire. So not a full ceasefire. They're not stopping the war completely, but not hitting any more infrastructure or energy pieces of the puzzle. Moscow and Kyiv, and this is the USA Today write-up, so I want to make this specifically clear because there are some asterisks to this. But after Moscow and Kyiv agree to stop hitting each other's power plants and electrical grids, negotiators would then move on to a potential halt in fighting on the Black Sea and then to a full ceasefire in the war, according to a White House statement. So it's important to understand the United States has agreed to this. And again, like we'll get into our role of this in a second, but U.S. and Russia came together, agreed to this. They're now pitching this over to Ukraine, and hopefully they would say yes to this. Now, we don't know exactly what all of the restrictions are. Are there things that are absolutely crazy that, you know, Ukraine would never accept that are part of this agreement? That could still be the case. But we do have at least initial word that Russia has basically implemented their side of the ceasefire without even getting that information, without even getting the okay from Kyiv. So they're like, we're going to stop right now to show, you know, sign of goodwill. Again, do you trust Russia's goodwill, Vladimir Putin's goodwill? I don't. But that's what they're trying to do is say, okay, look, we're We're serious about this. We're going to stop hitting infrastructure right now, even before we get the OK. This would be a multiple step process. If they get the OK on both sides, then they talk about stopping the naval stuff going on. And if that happens, then they would go to the full ceasefire. Now, there's all sorts of parts of this that Ukraine is not going to like, I'm sure, which is also, you know, things like giving up lots of their territory, which they don't want to give up. I think at the end of the day, that's going to be something they're going to have to deal with if they want this to be over with. The question, of course, then goes to whether there is a security force that's able to be kept in Ukraine to prevent another, you know, invasion in 6 months or 9 months. Donald Trump has said that Putin told him that European peacekeeping troops would be fine in Ukraine. The Kremlin is not saying that. They are saying, well, we have not agreed to that yet. So that might be a line that winds up holding this open. But that's where we are right now on that one. And it's a pretty big development. We will see if that goes forward anymore. A couple other stories I want to let you know about. Texas having an arrest of a midwife and associate on charges of providing abortions. A midwife and associate have been arrested and charged with illegally performing abortions in Greater Houston, according to court records and the Texas Attorney General. Apparently, the first criminal arrest of abortion providers since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade in 2022. Number one, I just want to point out that they said there'd be arrests like this constantly, right? That was the big thing. Oh, gosh, Roe versus Wade. Every abortion doctor is going to be going to prison. Of course, that hasn't happened at all. This is the first one. The other thing is, like, and this is going to be a little odd of a concept when you talk to, you're talking to the party that burned down cities and expected to be bailed out by a vice presidential candidate. But, like, when laws exist, you're supposed to follow them. You might get arrested if you don't. That's the way the law works. And you might say, well, wait a minute, I don't like that particular law. If I don't like that law, then I shan't be arrested. I don't like the, right here, I've got a repeal the 16th Amendment mug right in front of me, studosmerch.com. I don't like the 16th Amendment. I don't like paying taxes. Guess what? Still have to pay them. If I don't pay them, guess what happens? I don't get to say, well, I don't like that particular law. I don't want to give you 30% or 40% of my income. No, they will just throw me in prison. So you got to actually pay attention to law. Now, you can move to another state. You can go to another place. You can go to a place that has these laws. There's lots of things you can do, unfortunately, to end the life of your child. There are ways to do that legally for some ungodly reason. And ungodly really serves a really important purpose in that particular sentence. That being said, you can't break the law or you go to prison. That's the way it works. There's that going on. Finally, let me give you this. Gavin Newsom sending prepaid phones, like burners, to tech CEOs. The guy wants money. He wants to run for president. He's trying to win over tech CEOs. He's been abusing them and making their lives miserable for the entire time. Now he's sending them burners with his phone. This is like The Wire or like Better Call Saul, right? Like, you get the phone and like you open it up and it has just Gavin Newsom's number in it. Call me whenever you want. I don't think his normal constituents get that access. That's weird. And of course, the reason for that is because he wants their money to run for president in 2028. We'll have more on that when we get our burner. We'll let you know. If there's one thing that we can all agree on, is that when bureaucrats are involved in things, well, it's going to get a lot more complicated. Ask Gavin Newsom. That's exactly what it feels like kind of trying to buy or sell a home. The process can be a nightmare. Paperwork and deadlines and endless negotiations. It's like the housing market was designed by the same people who keep redacting history. Well, that is why you need the best real estate agent on your side. Real Estate Agents I Trust connects you with top-selling agents in your area, the pros who know the market, who understand the insane process and actually get deals done. No part-time hobbyists, no rookies, just the best of the best. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, do not get lost in the confusion. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com. The name says it all, and it's a free service to you, so why not take advantage? It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Okay, so here's what happened. A little bit of an altercation at a 7-Eleven, an establishment I frequent, let's be honest about it. I wasn't at this particular 7-Eleven at the time this occurred, though. However, apparently at this one, there was a little alley next to it, and there was a guy sleeping there. Hopefully that's it. He was just taking a little bit of a nap. Another customer came in and went to the front of the office, front of the store, and said, "Hey, like, there's a guy. He's asleep in the alley. I don't know if he's alive or not, but can you check that out?" And right at that moment, he gets bonked on the head with something. Now, let me give you a person, the person who actually bonked him on the head. It's this woman. This is the perp in this particular case. She was arrested for her actions. What were her actions? She threw something at the gentleman. What would it be? A Pringles can. This is Florida, by the way. I should have mentioned that. Florida woman assaults a man with a Pringles can. Now, I feel like there's better things in a 7-Eleven to assault somebody with. Pringles, by the way, I'm afraid they put them back on the shelves. They'd all be broken. So that would be a tragedy. So just so you know, pay attention. If you're in Florida buying Pringles at a 7-Eleven, make sure you check the can, because they could be all shattered into a zillion pieces inside.